G'day everyone, for those who came in late, you're listening to X-Band, the fan podcast.
500 years ago, he washed ashore the sole survivor of a shipwreck, and upon the skull of the man who killed his dad, he said, I'm mad, I must eradicate piracy, injustice and cruelty, and all my sons will follow me, so evildoers will believe that this man cannot die.
The Phantom!
The ghost who walks!
The Phantom!
Enemies beware, the Phantom's always there, but you won't mind the Phantom. He finds you.
Hello, we are the Chronicle Chamber team, and this is X-Band the Phantom podcast. Our website is chroniclechamber.com, and you can contact us via email on chroniclechamber@gmail.com, or you could subscribe to us via whatever platform you're listening or watching this through, whether that's YouTube's, iTunes, or any of your Android apps. Welcome along to the March 2021 episode of Comics and News. This is episode 185 of the podcast. My name is Dan Fraser, and tonight I'm joined by Stephen East. How are you, Stephen?
I'm very well, Dan, and yourself?
Good, not too bad, not too bad, although I can see Jermaine Parker shaking his head. He's a bit worried about how this has started and hoping I'm going to settle into a rhythm. How are you, Jermaine?
You've missed a couple of podcasts, and you can tell.
And then you've thrown me into the role of chair. So I can feel the wheels of the bus going straight over me. But anyway, I'm sure I'll slip into the rhythm of it. There's been a few podcasts. You guys have been doing some awesome work with your interviews, particularly you, Jermaine, with your interview, both of you with Terry Beatty, and since then with... Oh, crap, remind me, 184?
No, so Terry Beatty was 184, and then 186, which we have already recorded, is going to be Ben Rabb, which I'm looking forward to listening to. So that's actually, while it's in the past for us, it's actually in the future for all our listeners.
Well, in the future.
Sounds like a Christopher Nolan movie.
That's a solo one for you, isn't it?
Yes. There was a few issues, but we'll... That's all addressed, and we give you a proper shout out and stuff like that. It's Terry Beatty was a blast. I had fun.
I really enjoyed that chat.
Yeah, it was a real blast. And then Ben Rabb. Let's put it this way: I throw the gauntlet down about him getting on board for a TV show or something like that, and he responded.
Because he's got runs on the board when it comes to TV, doesn't he?
Sorry?
He's got runs on the board when it comes to TV.
Yes, exactly. So he knows the Phantom. The Billy Zane movie was the avenue or the what got him hooked into the Phantom. He wrote for Team Phantom and for Moonstone as well. And then he has done TV shows like Warehouse 13, Flash, Arrow, Beauty and the Beast for the teen fans out there. So Dan, I'm sure you've probably watched that one. And he's done some others as well. So he's got runs on the board, and it's a good fun episode.
Excellent. Well, I haven't heard it yet, and I'm very much looking forward to the recording going live. And I think that's a great little teaser for 186 when it comes out in probably a week or two after you're listening to this one. But this one is 185, as I said. It's the March Comics and News for 2021, and it is a bumper podcast. We're going to try our best to keep it as short as we can because while there's a lot to talk about, we've all got everyone listening. Well, we'll try and keep it short. We'll try and stick to the script as best we can. There's not that many comics to review, but there's a whole lot of news that we want to talk about. So anyway, let's get stuck straight into it. We're going to review, to begin with, the comics that have come out of Frew, episodes issues 1886, 1887, and 1888. Which is the three-part saga of the Vultures by Peter Anderson and Anthony Spey. And it was really great to see these three, I think, come out in consecutive issues. We're going to save the filler stories or the backstories by Paul Mason and the Revenge of the Vulture story, which was in episode 3. We'll save that for the next stage. But let's talk about Saga of the Vultures parts 1, 2, and 3 as a whole to begin with. So It's a
Can we start off by saying that that we are trendsetters. We said, what, 6 months ago, maybe a year ago in our podcast, that we need to see more stories about the Vultures. They are all in our top 10. I think a lot of us were added even in our top 5 villains of the Phantom. We said we need more. And boy, have Fru delivered on that one.
Well, we can claim it. As I was about to say, it's a villain we were all calling for. That's right. It was issue X-Band 172. If you want to go back and listen to that, our top 10 Phantom villains. And yeah, you're right. We did call for. I think all of us who were in that podcast said that the Vultures were one of our top 10, and all of us called for more of it. And as you say, Fru has delivered. I feel like Dudley and Glenn and Renee probably plan a little bit further ahead in time, and we might be on their coattails, but the fact that we published first is important, so we don't have as much of a lead in time. It's something we're all calling for. What do we think when it arrived?
Stephen, you go first, mate.
Well, yeah, I'm looking... Well, like you said, we're all looking forward to the Vulture story, and I think it was a great concept. I think the story was good, like it's a having the Phantom come across the Vultures in this town. It was set up nicely. The artwork is superb. The artwork is really good. Lots of good action. There are a couple of negatives, but I'll let you go with your positives first, Jermaine.
Yeah, no, I really like the artwork. Anthony Spey, he's done some stories for Phantom Men. We've talked about him for about the last year, I believe. He did a 2019 Christmas story, which was his first one. And then he's done a couple of Phantom Men stories since, including the one where President Nwaga becomes president again. So, and then we've had probably 10 to a dozen of Peter Andersons. I felt what I liked about it was that Anthony Spey was because these are published in black and white, as you can see, you know, the stories are in black and white, and it's harder drawing in black and white than it is in colour. But I thought towards the end he was, you know, becoming very, very good at it and stuff like that. I liked it. I liked the origin story of the Vultures, of the main origin story in part two. The cover.
That's right.
That's my favourite cover of the three. I just love that.
These look familiar. Like, weren't they at the 2018 Supernova?
Melbourne one just before COVID, or when COVID had just started hitting. So it was Melbourne this time last year, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm sure I saw these earlier, but I could be wrong.
But they're great covers. I really love the covers. I love the concept. I love how we're getting in the origin story of the Vultures as well, because we know the Vultures, but when we're actually getting to know a little bit more about them. There was one joke in there in the second part, which I actually did like, and we have been sometimes a little bit negative towards Pity and his jokes before, but I love this one here. If you're on YouTube, you should be able to see it. On this screen here, where they're talking about the punishment of the thing, and the guy goes, "Send him to my mother-in-law." I just thought that was good. I like that one.
You have a great relationship with your mother-in-law there, Jeff.
My mother-in-law actually loves me, but, you know, anyone who's been married knows that mother-in-laws can be a little bit annoying at times.
Mother-in-law jokes might be the only ones we're still allowed to say. I don't know. Maybe we're not. I don't know. It's an interesting time. Yeah.
What about you, Dan? What do you like?
Well, there was a. I'm glad you raised the covers, and it's interesting what you said there about having seen these covers a year ago. So that probably does talk to my point about the Fru knew what they were doing about the Vultures before we did. But And I don't have it in front of me. I can't find my part two for the love for Love Nor Money. But I do remember that I wondered if this was the joke that you were going to raise, Jerm, because there's a comment in there about when we're hearing the origin story, obviously the way that that's told is that the Phantom has fought his way into the Vulture's castle and then decides he's going to have a half-hour, 45-minute sit-down and a cup of tea with the Vulture's historian for whatever reason. But that's okay. It's good for the story.
I didn't mind that.
he was very casual, but that's okay. It's a three-parter, and it was a great way to get the origin story in. The historian, the storyteller at one point says a joke that, and I wish I had it in front of me now, that was very much along the lines of, hey, I'm telling the story, you just enjoy it sort of thing, which I think might have been a tongue-in-cheek or a little commentary from Pitt A as an author to the people who are reading his story.
My story.
Yeah.
You said they searched the forest for hours and hours. How do you know that? You weren't there. Neither was Casper. You're ruining my story.
Yeah. It actually reminds me of Old Man Moss. He used to tell the stories and then the kids would get all excited and stuff and he would wait and he would say, who's telling the story here? And they have to go, sorry, Uncle Moss. And
It's a great teacher technique, but I did also think that it might be Pitt A just having a little word to the fans out there saying, hey, I'm telling the story, you just sit back and enjoy it.
I wonder
the facts in the way of a good yarn.
Yeah, I wonder if it's more about the fact that it actually inserts the Phantom more in that part. Because part two, there's not much Phantom for obvious reasons. And so it kind of gets him in a little bit more. Maybe there's a bit of both or something. When we get Pitt Anderson on for a podcast and we have started talks about that, we'll ask him what the point of that, and we'll ask him what his relationship with his mother-in-law is as well.
I'd imagine it's probably healthier than his relationship with his fans. I don't know. But no, look, as a saga of three comics, that you've already talked about the covers. I agree with you, Jermaine. The cover to 1887 part two is going to have to be a short price favorite at this stage for cover of the year. I also really liked the previous one with the green background and all of the vultures. I thought that was a really cool way of showing the generations of them and the multitude of people in the gang. So and that vibrant green is not a color we see a lot of on, despite him being a jungle character. Probably don't see a lot of that on the front of covers either. So yeah, it really stood out for me. Yeah. I'd love them both as posters.
Yeah, I reckon they would work quite well as posters, maybe for Supernova 2021, which I think is in our bit of notes. Now, Stephen, you mentioned...
It's almost got that glow zone feel to it. Yeah, those glow in the dark.
Glow and dark poster like that, it might scare a few kids if those.
It might.
You wake up and there's all these. Stephen, you mentioned you had a couple of negatives. I'll be interested in hearing that. I've got probably one negative, but yeah, I'll be interested in hearing what your negatives are.
But my negative, I hate being negative, but if I'm going to be critical, sometimes the jokes are forced. Some of the jokes, are good and work, and other times, why'd you say that for? And I'm a fella who loves a good pun, but
that's true.
Yeah, it's like I was trying to think of a carpentry pun that would work. I think I nailed it.
Yeah,
I could actually hear crickets in the background, Stephen.
We do have that audio clip somewhere.
I could actually hear crickets in your background where you are. Probably could. They've been nuts
around here this season. It might be at my place, actually. I can hear him outside.
But that's the type of thing. Unfortunately, that's the type of reaction I've been kind of getting, reading some of the lines in the in the dialogue. Oh, really?
Like, so dad joke have Friday. You got have you got examples in part one, two?
No, I don't, because I didn't look at it before I came onto the podcast. I just remember it. There was one that was, yeah. Because it seemed a lot like, you know, the old 80s goofy pun, you know, you've got to make a quick quip type thing.
Because I didn't actually, now, you know, I'm going to leap to Peter's defense here. I didn't actually feel like there was as many puns in these three-part stories as there was in, say, like his last, you know, the Outlaws story and stuff like that. I actually thought this was a lot more punchier and to the point. Maybe I missed the jokes. Maybe I, you know, they went over my head or something. What about you, Dan? Did you?
Like, I'm probably conscious when I read a Pat Anderson story that that's a criticism I've had in the past. Okay. I'm probably with you on this one, Germ, though. Maybe I'm overreading the let me tell the story joke. I probably didn't enjoy the mother-in-law joke as much, but I didn't think that it was that they were forced as much as they have been in previous stories. And I know that has been a criticism, but that I've had in the past. But no, I enjoyed these stories in and of themselves. I liked the concept of, well, it went very quickly, actually, if I remember part one, like for the first three panels, Phantom's in Germany, and then all of a sudden he's moved. I thought that was a weird, or like, then he's traveling through Austria or whatever country it is that he finds the Vulture's castle. But from there, it's I think it's a good sort of half detective story, which is what the Phantom is. It's an adventure story. The squeaking wheel on the mill, I thought, was probably overplayed. Like, if you didn't realize that was going to be a factor towards the end of the comic, like, it would have been the worst red herring of all time, because we heard so much from the wheel. Yes, we get it squeaks, it's old, you know. So that was probably overplayed, but
foreshadowing like you wouldn't believe,
like you would not believe. Yeah, but look, as a whole package with essentially what is a two-part story has the origin of the Vultures inserted in the middle, I enjoyed it. Probably the end, I don't know, trying to leave another in to pick that part of the story. I would have been probably satisfied if that chapter of the Vultures had been defeated. There's so many chapters of the Vultures that we didn't necessarily need. That young girl, which is an odd character. But no, as a whole, I enjoyed it. I'm not sure that I would want to go back to Elizabeth necessarily, though.
See, I don't mind having that loose end, for lack of a better word, with who was it, Elizabeth? Sorry, I was just flicking back through part one and
seeing
a few things. But having her depicted like a female Joker, I didn't like.
Yeah, I didn't really get her as a character, to be honest, in terms of
she seemed like a maniacal
girl who joins the Vultures. It just didn't, the justification for that didn't really make sense to me.
I wonder if there's going to be more about her and we haven't like seen that yet, if you know what I mean, like a backstory of her or, because it is weird, because this is the first female Vulture we've seen.
Yeah.
I just thought she was like a fountain, like a daughter of one of the Vultures.
Yeah.
But that's what I had her as, and then
no, it did explain that, didn't it?
I don't think it does. I don't think it explains where she comes into, where she fits into it, or anything like that. But I'm intrigued whether Peter is going to use her to explore the Vultures more, because I know Peter Anderson is a huge Vultures fan. He wrote about him in Requiem, in this as well. So he must have a bit of a love affair with the Vultures.
And I thought Requiem was sensational.
Now, is that the war one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that one.
So I just wonder whether she's going to play another part. And because I thought the ending was a little bit anticlimactic. And yeah, that's probably the right way of putting it. But I wonder if this is not actually the end, so to speak, and that's why it kind of feels like you're like, well, what's happening? You know, why was she alive? Or, you know, yeah. the Phantom just kind of wrapped up the place and then he just kind of walked. And then we get the epilogue with her is, you know. Yeah. So when I first read it, I was like, what? You can't end there. No, that's not an ending. You know, that wasn't an ending for me. But the more I'm thinking about it and I'm like, well, hang on. Maybe it is going, you know, there is going to be another part. And so maybe, maybe the ending's not. When I first read it, I was like, oh, but maybe that's just that. That's a good thing because it's making me want some more and we can explore her as a better, as more of a character and learn more about her.
Yeah. So, introduce this new character. She seems bloody psychotic. And, so she could be a good adversary for the Phantom. I don't mind her surviving the fall, whatever it was.
She does. Stephen, you made a brilliant point about her being a bit like Harley Quinn. She does.
Yeah.
She does remind me of that.
And that's a criticism I have with anything that in a lot of stories, if they try to be like someone else, try and be a bit more original. Like when that came out, I thought, oh, really?
Mm.
Joker, Harley Quinn. Yeah. I don't mind her surviving, but
Harley Quinn. I didn't mind it.
That's just because you like. I can't remember her name.
Well, look,
the joke's going to fall flat now.
She wears a lot more clothes than Harley Quinn, so you know.
Well, it was 300 years ago, whatever.
Yeah, I suppose so. In this panel, she is showing her ankles. So,
Oh wow,
risky. I should apologise. It's Elspeth is the way it's actually written, not Elizabeth. I was reading that wrong for a long time before I had to go back and check myself. I think they. As I said, the Vultures has got so many chapters. I don't feel like the 18th Phantom needs to go back and deal with this chapter again. I would probably have been just as satisfied if the.
It wasn't it the fourth Phantom?
Is it as far back as that? So there That's you go.
That's why I said 300 years. I thought it was the fourth.
Yeah, sorry.
I was trying to give you the hint. I'm waving four.
All good. I don't know that I need to go back and read another story about the fourth because, again, he'd have to go to Austria. And I feel like, and I've said this before, that a lot of the early Phantoms must have had to spend some time in the jungle to establish the legend. The travel times back then and all the rest of it, and I know we don't want to delve too much into what is the reality of this comic strip and comic book character because, of course, it's bent and twisted. But for mine, a lot of the earlier Phantoms really should be spending most of their time in the jungle. So I don't need him to go back to Austria or whatever it was to spend.
Does it have to be the fourth Phantom?
Well, it would have to be the fifth at best if you want to have Elspeth come back.
Or the Elspeth could go to Bangar.
Yeah.
That seems unlikely. That seems unlikely. Unless there's a war there and there's a lot of dead bodies and she needs to start robbing them. I did like Pide's tactic whatever you might say about it. His use of the language where we as English readers would recognise words and be able to understand short phrases. He hasn't shied away from using the language of the geography that he's writing in. And I think that worked really well. It wasn't over the top, but it was enough to go, I that's right, this is set in wherever. So
yeah, particularly in issue number one or the first part of the story. And I'm like, he knew what was going on, but I thought, I wonder what would happen if I put the, got my phone out and got the translator going over it and, it just started flashing up and all the English versions of the words.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, it said what I thought it said.
Very good. All right. So, any other comments on the Vultures story from these three through comics?
No. I reckon we go to the Revenge of the Vultures, seeing it's another Vultures, and then we'll do the War ones.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, in issue 1888, it was a 52-page story. A tad more expensive as a result, $6.50 ticket price. It had a full filler story, if you like. So the backstory, the second part was a full story. An old, 1970s old.
75.
75, Team Phantomen's story, by Ulf Grunberg and Bertil Wilhelmsen, who was one of, if not the very first Team Phantomen artists. So, Revenge of the Vultures, what did you guys think of this one?
I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I did as well.
Yeah. It seems like I like the Phantom Ship stories, you know, where he's got to be Mr. Walker in Cabin 7. And, you know, who's that mysterious man? And then, yeah, I just think it flowed well. And I just finished this joining on the podcast because I realized there was a few pages that I still hadn't read yet. You know, breaking out of the wine bottle. I liked it. It was just...
Yeah.
It flowed well. The artwork is great. I really like the artwork, the darkness of that. And it really does show the vultures for the grave robbing bastards that they are.
Yeah. I enjoyed the wine casket. And it went for from page 38, 39, 40, 41 to 42 is when he got out. And so it went for quite a few pages, but I actually really enjoyed that whole sequence.
I think it was folk-like in my mind, that section, you know. The way he's drawn it, like early on, probably not quite so much Cy Barry, but maybe the other two.
Mm.
It just had that feel in that section there, you know, how's he going to get out of this mess?
Yeah.
And it takes, what, 3 or 4 pages for him to get out of it.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I really enjoyed that element of it as well. I thought it was amusing on page 44 when the henchmen have gone down to, you know, make sure that his body's dissolved in the wine or whatever was supposed to have happened. And it must be strong wine. anyway, so he's tipped the barrel over. It's spilt. Wine's gone everywhere. And he's escaped. They walk down into the basement and go, oh, where is he gone? There's no commentary of the barrels exploded and there's a big puddle of wine we've both just walked through. They make it like he's just gone invisible. So anyway,
well.
That's right. But I really liked, the way that it finished with the battle against the villain of the week. And
the sword fight.
The demasking of the Phantom, and then he who sees the Phantom's face dies an ugly death, old jungle saying. I really liked the use of that trope. It's one of my favourites. I remember that so fondly from the first time I read the Goggle-Eyed Pirates. And so anytime that comes up is a tick in my book. So, for a 1975 Team Phantomen Ulf Grunberg story, and I've been critical of Team Phantomen in the past, but I really enjoyed this story. It ticked a few boxes. It was a Lee Fork villain that we wanted to see more of, and then we always wanted more people to explore. This was done 46 years ago, and really well done. So it's a shame
What we've asked for, isn't it? It hits the nail on the head. It's what we've asked for.
Yeah, it does.
In that podcast.
Now,
before you go, Jermaine, I've got a question for you because I think you're the fella to answer it.
Yeah.
Bottom of page 49. It's the second time in my life someone has torn off my mask. Both times a legend has come true. What was the first?
In this one, I reckon it would be the Goggle-Eyed Pirates, is it the Toadmen? I think it's the Toadmen story.
The Toadmen are in the Goggle-Eyed Pirates.
No, the Toadmen and Goggle-Eyed Pirates are two different. They're two different pirates. So it was the Toadman, the chief does it, and he gets shot by a marine. So that was the first time someone died after seeing it. So that would be what it is. But there's also an error. And now I'm not sure whether this error was a free-created error or whether it was a Team Phantomen error. So this is on page 36. If you're on YouTube, you'll be able to see the panel. So basically he is saying, aha, the passenger on the boat in a mask and costume. Now I recognize you. It was you who destroyed the organization's nest in Bangala. Now, the vultures never had a nest in Bangala. The story that they're talking about was the Lee Fork vulture story. The Phantom actually traveled somewhere to break up the nest. So there's a little bit of an error there. I haven't quite figured out whether it's actually originated from a Team Phantomen story, or whether it got in the translation and the editing put it, whether Frew created that error or not. So, yeah, for those who like a little bit of that type of stuff, it'd be interesting to see if anyone else picked that one up. But did you guys like the fact that, because when Frew first announced or advertised part three, it was going to be the Robot Phantom, which was by Massimo. Do you prefer us getting the backup Revenge of the Vulture story, or would have you liked to see the robot story?
Well, the Revenge worked really, really well, particularly seeing as it's a whole bunch of Vulture stories.
Yeah.
And we'll get the future. Was it the robot one at a future date?
I thought it was a smart move by Frew.
Yeah, I agree. A bit of a no-brainer in a sense that you've got this Vulture story. Yeah, absolutely. Package it up with the other Vulture story.
Yeah.
Although I was a bit disappointed, and I think if everyone's happy, I'd like to move on to the other filler stories, because I was actually really enjoying the sequence of Phantom in Vietnam stories that we saw episodes one and two, or parts one and two of the Saga of the Vultures. It would have been so cool if there was a Vulture or two appeared in the Vietnam War and that tie-in had happened. Now, as we've said, this is months, years, at least 12 months. We know that the Nam stories have been with Frew for probably 12 or 18 months. So you're trying to tee this up a long, long time ago, but it would have been so cool if the third Saga of the Vultures story had been a Paul Mason Vietnam Vultures appearing there. That'd have been a neat.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Just because, I guess I like the Paul Mason stories, the Vietnam ones. There's actually been a bit of chatter on Facebook today as we're recording about the Vietnam stories. I'm surprised this conversation hasn't happened earlier, where Paul Mason has very delicately and smartly towed that middle line where he's having a go at both sides, or he's portraying both sides as doing horrible things, and the Phantom is on that line of like saying, hang on, it's not the Yanks are the good guys or the commies as the good guys. These are both doing bad things, and there's the poor, Vietnam people that have been caught in the middle of it, and he's towed that line very, very well. And I'm surprised there hasn't been a bit of a chat before today. So hats off to Paul Mason for able to do that. What I liked was after reading each of these parts, I went to Wikipedia and Google and all that, and learnt and went in a real rabbit warren of learning more about what happened in the Phantom comic, and getting a lot more immersed and watching TV shows and stuff like that. And so for myself, I actually found that really educational, and I'm sure I probably wasn't the only one.
Absolutely,
I'd be very surprised if you came across anything in your research that disagreed with or was a counterpoint or whatever to what Paul Mason had portrayed, because that is, I'm a history teacher and I've studied Vietnam and taught Vietnam several times, and it is so true to my understanding of the historical records. Like, they're so well researched, and the stories are very well informed. It's not just, I saw a Vietnam movie and I feel like I can write in the time. Paul knows his stuff about this war and the sense of the reality that he portrays. So it's all factually accurate as far as I can tell. And the way that he portrays what must have been the living standards and what it was like to actually be there. It's an incredible talent that he's displayed there. I think we're absolutely the beneficiaries of it.
I also like how the Phantom, because there was the top of my head, I can't remember the exact moments, but there was like the, where was it? Da Nung and stuff like that. And there was all these places. The Phantom, because sometimes when people try and force the Phantom into history, they don't really know how to portray the Phantom because they're not used. The Phantom's a hero. He's supposed to save the day. But
yeah.
I thought how he portrayed it, where the Phantom didn't win, he wasn't able to solve it, where, you know, the real hero was not actually the Phantom, but it was the other people. I liked how he did that as well.
Yeah, agree. And the fact that I think particularly with the second one, Have You Ever Seen the Rain?
Yeah.
The Phantom is hearing the story. Like, he's not at Melee trying to stop the massacre. He's not coming in on the, you know, he's not the, there's no heroes of that day. And so it would be entirely inappropriate for him to suddenly be there on the scene. But then to be hearing the account of it from someone who was there, and the way that that is retold and relayed, and the emotions that that the Phantom goes through as he listens to that story and his response, it's really powerful.
And the way that story is told is excellent. Going the old school Rex finding the Chronicle, and reading something that, you know, was hidden, and this is a bit secret, and and then a little bit worried, you know, the way that, that, you know, before the page turns, you're not sure what the Phantom's done there, but you know, and Grant reassuring, you know, trust the Phantom, you know, trust what's happened here. And and exactly like you said, Jermaine, go out and research a little bit more, and you know, we've had conversations with even with Tony DePaul, and I just thought it was really well done. And I don't have much of an idea about the Vietnam War, Dan, particularly, you know, if you've taught it, you obviously know a heck of a lot more than me. But I found it really interesting, and I'm not a war guy, but I've really gotten into this.
It wasn't a Rambo takeoff or a parody or anything like that.
And no one's being glorified here.
Now, if I had to put a criticism, it would be on some pages the font can be a little bit too small. But that's, you know, that's being fairly picky. But I loved having the chain of patience. It's good to see the chain of patience back in a Phantom comic. Hasn't happened very often. There's a great article online if you want to learn more about the chain of patience.
But, where did you find that, Jermaine?
On Chronicle Chamber, funny enough. It's a good website.
It must have been the first, again, I wish I had them in front of me, but the must have been the end of part one, the It Ain't Me, It Ain't Me story. It had all the case notes and all the historical details it had on the last page. So not that one you've just shown us, Jerm, but the other one. Again, in terms of a starting point or terms to Google and start looking up, that's just a treasure trove. So,
And he did the same thing back in the war annual as well. And I thought that was a great literary device in telling the story.
Yeah. Probably the thing that I missed was, where do these stories fit in the ongoing trying to find, and I can't even remember the name of,
I
think it's a Wambezi Prince or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure Wombo was one, back in Lee Fawkes Day, a Wambezi Prince, but, so where these fit in that ongoing saga would have been cool, but you've got these eight page stories. There's not the time for them to fit. And when he delivered these to Fru, I'm sure Paul didn't know what order they'd be published in or anything else. So you can't really have a continuity in there so much. But even perhaps a line at the end that said, right, well, and then I kept moving on my way to find the Wombezi Prince. That might have been a way to make sure that it was still part of the continuity, but that's, you know, it's such a minor criticism. Doesn't even bear thinking about, really.
Yep. Fairly minor criticism, yours and mine.
Yeah.
All right.
And do you find that you can no longer look at the story titles without singing them?
Have you ever seen the rain?
And I didn't pick on It Ain't Me, but It Ain't Me, It Ain't Me, It Fortunate Son. So,
Credence.
Oh, is it? Credence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of them. Greatest Clearwater Revival. What was his first one? Was that another Creedence?
It was, but remember we Googled it, and it was, Stephen, you weren't on that podcast. It was me and Dan, and we Googled it, and we got the wrong band. It was some, like, some really, really bad song. And then, Stephen, after you listened to the podcast, you, like, you berated us for about a week or something, like, you know, like, not getting the right song.
Well, yeah, that sounds like something I'd do.
It goes to show you come to expand for Phantom Facts, not music trivia.
Oh, I remember that now, yeah.
Yeah. Should we move on?
Yeah, we'll move on. Now, we do need to say at this stage that we're not going to review 1890, it must be, is it? Or 1889, sorry, which is a part one. It is out and people will have read it, but we're not going to review it at this stage because we want to wait until we've seen part two. And like we have with Saga of the Vultures, you know, be able to review that as a package. So we'll save that one for the moment. Instead, we're going to move on to... Sorry, Steve?
Which is just as well because I don't have it yet.
There you go. That's it. That's how that, well, now that's the reason. But we are going to move on to, and I'm just reaching to see where I have put it. Here it is. We're going to move on to, Steve's holding it up as well, the Pirates of the Red Dragon trade paperback, which has been available on the free website for, I want to say a month, maybe even 6 weeks now. And so a lot of people will have that, probably maybe 3 to 4 weeks. I received mine as accompaniment to the Phantom board game, which we're going to talk about in a little while as well. But to start with the trade paperback, guys, straight off the bat, before we start talking about any of the stories, what did you think about the cover, the packaging, the feel of the finished product?
Awesome. All that is fantastic.
Yeah. It's a great... It's probably...
It's presented really well.
The second trade paperback's probably my favourite, then this one, and closely followed by number one. Maybe one, then this one, and then three. But yeah, this is a top notch. It's a great. It's thick. It's got great art. The colouring's good. If you want it now, we're going to review it. But if you want to review just it in probably more detail than what we're going to do now. There is a video on our website and our YouTube channel as well about this, where we've actually gone into great detail about each story, each page. But I thought it was a great book. I wish Fru could do more of these. I've said it before, but I would rather an extra trade paperback than an annual.
Mm. Yeah, and but they are producing one a year basically at this stage. Yeah. Yeah, I can understand the desire for more, but you know that's part of what makes them special as well, is there's not 1,000 of them. So
that was only four.
so far. Now, yeah. Jermaine said, we've reviewed the stories and all the rest of it in that YouTube video. So certainly go back and look that one up. We've also had a chat about some of these stories as well, because unlike the general vibe of Frew and Dudley Hogarth, he doesn't like reprinting stories unless they're, you know, more than 20 years since the last time that Frew reprinted them. The bulk of these stories have actually been reprinted in the last 5 years, which means that printed the first time in the last 5 years, which means that we've actually reviewed these already as stories. So if you want to talk about, we'll start with, you know, as we go through the trade paperback, we've got Rise of the Red Dragon parts 1 and 2, which was the prequel to the Pirates of the Red Dragon saga. Now, the Red Dragon saga was printed for the first time in by Fru in 2017, and so we reviewed those at the time. That was back in Expand podcast number 66, believe it or not. That feels like 120 podcasts ago. My goodness. I went back and had a bit of a listen. It's nothing like the sharp quality that you're listening to today. Geez,
we really? We were worse?
<He's frightening.
laughs> We were worse? Oh, my gosh.
Rise of the Red Dragon parts 1 and 2, the prequel, as I said, written by Dharma Canty and Jason Pelp, illustrated by Jason Paulos. We reviewed those in Expanse number 98 and 102 back from 2018. So, you know, it's only, that's only 3 years ago. So it's actually a relatively recent reprint or a quick reprint for Frew. Obviously, in the context of the board game and putting it in the trade paperback, we understand that. But what I would say about that, one thing we didn't talk about in those reviews was what the stories looked like in colour, because we didn't see them in colour at the time. We're getting them in colour for the trade paperback for the first time. So rather than dwell on the storyline or anything like that, let's just talk about these ones quickly in terms of what we thought colour added to the story.
Added so much.
Yeah.
Jason Paulos's work is so much better in colour. Like, we've been critical in the past that it can look a little bit busy in black and white. When it's in colour, and it's the way he uses his tones, and so, like, you know, like this panel's good as a good example. You know, there's a lot going on, but you're drawn to over here where the action is, where the most important people are, because of the colours, and you know, these are all plain colours, which kind of it kind of helps draw your focus and stuff like that.
He uses it to create levels. Like, you can see what the foreground, the background is. Whereas, you're right. When it's just black and white, they all look the same level. That's why it looks so busy. Mm. You're absolutely right. And because he colours it himself as well, he's colouring to what he's drawn and drawn for what he knows he's going to colour, if you follow me.
Mm. Yeah. I feel when his work's in black and white, it has that real sinister feel about it. But then when he's got it in the colour, it has this real pop.
And we've talked about it in the first issue of the year, so that would have been our January comics and news, which would have been probably about 4 or 5 episodes ago, where that whole story was in colour as well, that whole comic. So I think every time Jason Paulos comes, he does a story, it has to be in colour.
Ooh, that must be.
Must be.
Right. Steve, do you want to argue with that?
Look, I like it in colour, but I also like the sinister feel of a dark story in black and white.
Ooh. Yeah, no.
It would be interesting to see what he might do if he was recolouring or colouring Phantom by Gaslight, because it needs to be necessarily quite sinister and grey sort of thing. So it'd be interesting.
So apparently, and this is what I think Jason has told us this, Dan. I think you were with me when he told us this, is that every story or every page he produces for Frew, he gives it to him in black and white, but then also in colour. So, and that's just part of the package that he provides. So, in a sense, it might cost Frew more to publish it in colour, but it doesn't actually cost them more in what they got to charge, because Frew are getting it in colour anyway. So,
yeah,
I think while that fee's the same, let's produce it in colour.
Yeah, you're right. I do remember being part of that conversation. It was at a Supernova, maybe in 2018, that he said that to us. And, I was blown away by the fact that he does that. But he said to us that's just how he'd like to see it. And so he wants to make sure that it's possible for Frew to publish it that way. So.
Yeah. And I also like the original stories in colour as well. I just felt, and I'm not sure, I'm not even sure who did those colours, to be honest. Oh, it was the Swedish guys that do the Team Phantom End stories. I just thought they did a really good job, and it didn't take away the artwork from George Best. And I really like George Best's work.
Yeah.
He's like one of my more favorite artists from that stage, along with from that era, along with Jamie Valley. I really like the colors. It goes well with it. So
smooth.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I just really like the colors in that. It's. You made a point before about, you know, them being published before. I'm glad we got to see them together in this trade paperback in colour. It just, even though we've got it 3 or 4 years ago, it's nice to get it.
It's a different comic now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you talk about the colours making it pop, you probably will be checking out page 150 and 151, because that's the reason why there's a little gold PG label.
So when you when you used the word pop, was that on purpose?
Oh, you read into it what you will, Joe. Did I think about that much? I don't know. Did I? but certainly that seems it certainly more apparent than I remember from the black and white, the nudity that's displayed in this particular story.
I'm glad that when I pass this to my boy just to have a quick look at it, he didn't see that.
If you're showing
back it, when I opened up, did the unboxing of the board.
If you're letting your under 12 certainly read this, you probably want to get the glue stick out and stick pages 150 and 151 together.
What my mum used to do with my stepdad's surfing magazines, she'd get a black art line and actually like draw, you know, like hairy chests on them, beards and stuff, yeah, like that. Or, you know, draw like little baggy draw clothes and stuff like that. anyway, what did you think about the news story?
Yeah, so I was going to go to that next. And obviously, we've got a sequel now to the Pirates of the Red Dragon trilogy. We've got the prequel that was done by Dale McCanty. Julie Dietrich has written the sequel. Now, before we talk too much about the storyline, we've got to acknowledge the moment, I suppose, that Julie Dietrich has become the first Australian comic book author. First Australian
female
to write a Phantom comic book. Trying to get the phrasing just right. So it's an extraordinary thing that it's taken until 2021 for a female author to have a Phantom story published. But it's a credit to Julie and also to Glenn and Renee to reach out and be, as they've been doing over the entire time in the Fru Crew, looking to employ Australian creators and looking for a diversity of creative teams. So. We've got to acknowledge Julie's contribution there. It's a significant marker.
Yeah, it is. What I like about it is, and we talked about this in the 5-year review, in probably a lot more length than what we have now, is that they've looked to make the Phantom more than just your grandfather's hero. For so long, for the last probably 15, 20 years, the Phantoms, oh, that's the comic that my grandfather reads. Or, oh, yeah, I know the Phantom because my grandfather reads that and he's got a stack of them at home. And one of the ways to do that is to make it more inclusive. And the way they've done that is they've got Phantom artists that are younger than us. And let's face it, we're middle age now. You need younger creators than us to be creating Phantom stories. And now what they've even done, they've even taken a second step forward is where they've now trying to, you know, now they've got a female writer as well who hopefully will, you know, bridge that gap and get some females on board reading the Phantom as well. And hopefully, the way I see it is Fru is making this an inclusive comic and hopefully we can see the benefits of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, if more people are going to come and read it, we're going to want quality stories. What did you think of the quality of the story of the sequel, The Adventure of the Dragon's Leg, which is a pretty clever pun that you'll understand once you've read the story. It's an interesting one where we've got a story from 1979, which, you know, in the same sense as I've just talked about the saga of the Vultures, I would have preferred for the villain to die at the end. At the end of the 1979 trilogy, the villain died at the end. But then in 2021, a new author has brought them back and explained how they survived and revived that character who we thought was dead. Thoughts on that?
No more spoilers. I haven't read it.
I didn't have a problem with that because it was explained in a clever way that it's half believable. And let's face it, there's been worse far out ways of heroes coming back from the dead in other comics. This is at least half explainable. My biggest concern's not with that. I liked it. There's a lot of aspects that I like about this story. There's a part in there when she's talking about she says something along the lines of there's seven other hideouts or something like that. Yes. So, you know, that perked my interest straight away. Just like, opens it up, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you know, and then there's all those the army of female ninjas that she had as well, which we haven't seen. We've seen in like 10 pages, but we haven't seen them since. So, Like, you know, I'm putting two and two together already straight away. So I like things like that. The artwork is amazing. I thought Ivan Peterson did a great job in coloring a modern style artist. You know, we've made comment before that Ivan's brilliant at re-imaging daily and Sunday stories. I thought he showed his ability to be able to also do modern stories in this, which is a real feather in his cap. I thought, you know, that he needs to be mentioned about that. The artwork I really enjoyed. Wendell's one of my more favorite artists. I am biased and I've got some of his original artwork. So, but
that doesn't make you biased, mate. You've got most of the people's original artwork. So,
is there anyone you don't have?
Ray Moore. there was some, I'm not sure whether you call them plot holes or whatever, but I got a little bit confused with a couple of areas in the story. That's probably my only criticism with that. And I thought overall, for the first story, I thought Julie has done a great job and I can't wait to see more of her.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it did have me diving back into part three of the original saga to go, hang on, I thought that Princess Sin had died and how can this have happened? And then you go back over that sequence of how she was crushed by the rock and whatever. And it's explained, like you said, well enough to go, oh, okay, I can accept that. It's fine. And then it becomes a really cool plot device in the sense of, you know, the symmetry, and I'm trying not to give away things for Stephen, but explain things to you, Germ. The symmetry between what they say happened to Princess Sin and what's going to happen to the Phantom. I thought that was a really cool plot device as well. And I really, I was just looking through it now and I was taken by, not sure why it was written as a part one and a part two. Maybe there were plans to have this in the regular series before the trade paperback idea was conceived or whatever, but just the way as it's turned out by producing it in the same book, the way that part one finishes with what's quite tragic. And again, probably Stephen, not trying to show you too much, but a really powerful and tragic scene. And then, you know, whether it's pun intended or not, Stephen, you'd love this. The splash page, it literally says splash down in the corner here. The splash page for part two is a cover image in itself, but is also part of the storyline. And I thought that was worked in really cleverly. Whether that's Julie doing it or Wendell's interpretation of her script and the way that he's decided to do that between the two of them, I think they've absolutely nailed that. So, as now, a whole story,
I have a question about that. Is this a bad guy, or is this one of the guys that in the first part of the first story that was trying to get away and he told to, you know, like get up, you know, hold on to the parasail and swim back to shore? Like, it's a bad guy, right?
Yeah, that's not explained. It doesn't, there's no indication either way.
Yeah. That's one of the errors. I'm looking at it and I'm going,
yeah,
is it a bad guy? Is it not? So it kind of like that bit left me a little bit confused.
Yeah, I'm okay with that because at that stage you've got two people in the ocean with sharks circling. It doesn't really matter whether he's a bad guy or a good guy. He's just a person and they're both battling for survival and the Phantom is trying to help him and it doesn't matter who it is. So that worked for me. I didn't mind that at all.
Yeah, I thought the other thing was like the way the Phantom kind of got out of it and he, you know, gets out and then towards the end and, you know, and then like how the princess kind of gets captured or doesn't get captured.
Yeah,
that that just like I'm not really sure what happened there. I don't know, and they're the two kind of the bits that I kind of get lost in the story, and then I don't like the parasail.
The hang glider.
I don't like it.
Not a massive fan of that myself either.
The way I see it,
that's something that might have come with the Defenders of the Earth fandom or something like that.
Yeah. The way I see it, and you know, we grew up on the Lee Fork stories, right? If he needs to go out to sea, he gets the Mora people to take him out there, and you know, that's just one of those phantom tropes. And that's like a phantom trope is, you know, you get Mora people taking me out there. A hang glider, just, I don't know. But, you know, we are nitpicking. It had a couple of issues, but overall, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the story. I liked it. I think as a seven stories, I really enjoyed it. I would recommend anyone who's listening who's not sure, go out and buy the trade paperback. There's some brilliant art. It's a great cover. You know, it's not a bad price either. You know, if you don't want to pay for shipping off the free website, get your local comic book shop to order it in as well. But I think it's a must get. It's a must
get. Oh, I agree. And just to make sure I'm on the record, I love Wendell Cavalcanti's art in the last story as well. I think I don't have any of his original work. Wendell, if you'd like to get in touch, I'd love to talk to you. But but I still really enjoy his work. I think the quality of the color, the cover, perhaps can get a little bit lost in the sense that it's been around for so long now. We've seen it so many times in connection with the board game that perhaps people overlook it or just go, oh yes, I've seen that before, but to actually have it in their hands now, Daniel Picciotto has done a fantastic job there as well. So and I would agree with you what you say there about the collection of it as a set of 5, 7, however many you want to say, stories. Dale McCanty and Jason Perlis were particularly good and thoughtful about the way they prequeled the story. I think Julie and Wendell have been particularly good and thoughtful about the way they sequeled the story. So, you know, for Norman Worker and George Best to have been able to, you know, create something that then was able to be expanded on either side as a package, it's a really good, what is it, 300 pages? No, nearly 200 pages of Phantom goodness. So, yeah. I agree. Buy it if you haven't already.
Definitely.
All right. That brings us to Giant Size number 16. I think this is going to be a pretty quick chat because while there's 108 pages and it's got the Panther and it's got Phantom Rager and it's got Sir Falcon and it's got the Raven, this is a Phantom podcast, not any of those podcasts. So I'm sure if you want to learn all about Phantom Ranger, you'll go and listen to the Phantom Ranger podcast. Have you started that yet, Jim?
I reckon we'll probably it. Don't think there's much out there. Look, the stories, the production quality is good. Sometimes that can be a little bit of a negative. It can be quite shady and bad photo, you know, bad style. It's good. The stories are fun. They are what they are. The Phantom story is the adventure in the Algiers.
Yep.
It's a great little fun little story. One quick question. Would you prefer something like this, or would you prefer like a King Charlton Gold Key story, which we've seen in the past? Or do you really don't care?
Yeah, no, I was probably disappointed, I guess is the word, when I opened it and saw Adventure in Algiers. This is a reprint of an old Frew. It's a story that we've seen in Frew 1,000 times. The Gold Keys and the Charltons and that sort of thing, that's probably what I'd prefer to see in this because we haven't seen those printed in Australia before. But this particular issue, number 16 of Giant Size, Also doesn't have any of the Glenn Lumsdens and the Shane Foleys and even the new Fel Mang stories we've seen through Giant Size. This is literally just a reprint of 50, 60, 70-year-old Australian comics. And when I say just, you know, there'll be people who absolutely love that and are reading these for the first time. I haven't read the other stories yet. And I've read Adventure Analogy so many times, I just took a flick through. And whether I actually go back and read this or not, I don't know. But there'll be people who love the fact that these old reprints are coming. I like the Giant Sizes that also have the yep. one or two new stories from yeah. modern artists.
I'm the same. Stephen?
I haven't read it. I haven't got it.
I actually thought you were asleep. Yeah, I was going to try and throw you under the bus. Trying to throw you under the bus.
All of a sudden, I realised that, hang on, we're not talking about the transition anymore. I think I missed that transition.
We're still at that stage of the year when Stephen is closer to midnight than we are in the rest of the state. So, sorry, mate.
All good.
All right, so
I should be getting it this week, though.
I guess the new thing that we do see in Giant Size is the cover, and it is another classic Glenn Lumsden. I love the way that he does this with the insets of the other characters, and it's his grey suit and all the rest of it. Glenn Lumsden has now done 16 of the 16 Giant Size covers. It seems he's got an absolute mortgage on that position.
And while he continues to produce artwork like that, you know. Don't replace him for it.
Since he's synonymous with Giant Size.
Mm.
He is. All right. Now, of course, if you disagree with any of our reviews, or maybe if you do agree with our reviews, there'll be one of us you agree with perhaps, or you've got a counterpoint, something that we haven't thought of, we haven't said, do make sure that you get in touch with us. And probably the easiest way for anyone to comment on anything these days is just to put a comment at the bottom of whatever platform you've seen this in or whatever post. There'll be a Facebook post to do with this podcast, obviously in the comment section below, you see that, in YouTube videos, whatever it is, make sure you put that in there. Let us know what you thought of any of these through comics. And that way it's something else for us to think about, or perhaps a different tack we can take in the next podcast. To do that, if you see us on Facebook, you can follow us on chroniclechamber.com. We're also moderators of the Phantom Collector group on Facebook, so we'd encourage you and love more people to join that one. On Twitter, we are at @chronicle_tweet. On Instagram, we are at @chroniclechamber. And on YouTube, we are Chronicle Chamber. So make sure that whatever platform you're listening to or watching to us now, you also check us out on the other ones and comment, reply, hit the bell. I don't know all the things that people say for social media stuff. That said, we've covered the Australian stuff and have only taken an hour or so over it. I'm sure we're going to now hear from have we got something from for Regal this week, Jerm? Do you know?
Yeah, by the time I actually edit this, we've got 7 and 8 already, and then Ankit's is doing a review for 9 and 10 at the moment. So it might actually be a review of all four.
Cool. Now, he's not going to be too biased about the covers, is he? And
yeah, how exciting is that, having you know, we talked before about how Fru have listened to us and brought out more Vulture mm-hmm. stories. Well, Regal's seen what we've done with the Bushfire book and got one of their one of the local Indian participants in that to do, like, who's done like half the Fru covers. And then Ankit is actually reviewing the comics and doing a really, really good job, and he's drawn a cover as well.
So
social influencers we are, my friends.
I think I'm going to have to draw a sketch of the Phantom and send that into Dudley.
I can tell you one thing, with your little singing performance, you won't be getting a job as a fill-in singer.
Fair enough. Well, hopefully we'll hear from Ankit. We'll hear about the Regal comics. He won't be too biased about how good the covers are. And then we're also going to hear from Mikael Lick, our Scandinavian correspondent and Chronicle Chamber member, to talk about what's going on with Team Phantom and, through March. So I'll throw to those guys now.
Hi, and welcome to another Chronicle Chamber book review. I'm Ankit, and today I'll be reviewing Regal Comics from India's issues number 7 and number 8, which are 85th anniversary specials. Now, The Phantom was published 85 years ago, and it's a monumental time, to be very honest. Like, 85 years for a strip to be still in publication is no joke. And as we all know, The Phantom is like a like the pioneer of the costumed hero vigilante comic strip. And so let's get into it. Now, firstly, before we begin about the individual issues, I'd like to talk a little bit about the common things about these issues. More importantly, if you are new to Regal Comics, you should check out our previous reviews on YouTube for more information, or also look into the Chronicle Chamber website, where we have articles which are more detailed about Regal Comics. So in a brief outline, I would tell you Regal Comics is an Indian publication who've been publishing Phantom in Malayali for a long time. It's been only from August of last year that they got the rights to publish it in English, and they've now been publishing it in English and in full color. Okay, now we get to our review. In December, we got the 2020 Christmas specials. The most important thing that they did in that was the Regal switch to a very thick, high GSM gloss paper. Now, this kind of gloss paper is basically the same that you get on the fruit trade paperbacks, or you know, any of the classic DC or Marvel trade paperbacks. So they've continued that on these issues too, and as you can see, it's done really well for the art. And yeah, so I wanted to get that out. And now the covers have been done by Mr. Vincent Moses Raja, who's done a lot of covers for Regal, and Mr. Abhilash Chacko. And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Abhilash Chacko's cover was featured also in issue number 3. Yeah. So yeah, and there's another thing, which is there are supplements with this one. So issue number 7 comes with a mini poster, which is the same as the cover art. Now, the poster's colors, if you can see, is a little bit more saturated, a little more darker than the much more muted and warmer, I would say, the cover. I do prefer this kind of saturation or colors over the much more stronger, sharper version. But yeah, to each his own. And it's basically got Mandrake and Phantom. And this issue comes with a Phantom card, which is again taken from the artwork from issue number 7. So yeah, now another thing which is very unique about these two issues is they both have an interior painted cover art by Roman Felmang. Now, if I'm not mistaken, his name is Romano Felmang, and he's very famous among the fans because of his work with Phantomen and Fru. And most recently, I have this trade paperback of Fru, the volume 3, the Triad Saga. This was all done. All the art is by Mr. Romano Felmang, and it's phenomenal. You guys, anyone, like especially the Indian fans who are going to check this out, this is, I just wish these got, maybe these came as posters instead of that. I mean, I wish and I hope to see more of Mr. Felmang's work being featured in Regal Comics. Anyway, now coming to issue 7. This has two stories as usual. It has Mandrake's Bon Voyage and for the Floridon Mystery. Now, the unique thing about this issue is Mandrake's Bon Voyage also is basically where the first time we have Mr. Terry Beattie's art being featured. And Regal has, as usual, done a fantastic job with that great paper, as well as very, very good color. You know, the print quality of Regal has been absolutely sensational, I would say. if you look at the stuff, there is no bleed anywhere. It's, I think Mr. BT himself would be very happy if he saw how it was reproduced. It's really done well. Secondly, the next story is a bit something which was unexpected. It's a Lee Fox story, and the art is by Olesen and Fredericks. Now, I'm a big fan of the Frederick Sundays for their art style, because I think whatever Mr. Frederick inks, it just looks really phenomenal. Like after Mr. Cy Barry, I think Mr. Fredericks has that very classic Phantom style of inking, and even he made Alex Savioux's, I think Defenders of the Earth was also inked by him, and that looks great too. Like you know it's a Frederick's inking the moment you see, you know how it is. And yeah, so like this is the first time Lee Fox, I think this is because this is the 85th anniversary, and not having the original creators in like some sort of mark in it would might look, I don't know, I mean I think that was the original intent for giving, but I'm not a big fan of the later Fox stories, to be honest. I'm a fan of the Frederick's art only. So yeah, this is something very unique, and it begs the question for me especially, like if they now do they right now have the rights to like the other Fox stories or anything, so may we see like a Cy Barry story finally in Regal? Who knows? We have to see. Also about Mandrake's Bon Voyage, this story is like a modern day classic. I think it's been printed by almost everyone from Fantomen to, you know, Fru to, I think even in Brazil Mythos are printing them. So yeah, this is a very momentous issue, I would say. So definitely look out for it, guys. Now, issue number 8. This has two stories on the Trail of an Assassin and Mystery of Firehead Peak, and they are both illustrated by Graham Nolan, and both are written by Mr. Tony DePaul. Now, everyone who's ever seen any of my video reviews know how much I'm a fan of Mr. Graham Nolan, because he is the Batman artist that I grew up in my childhood reading, and I've always look forward to, you know, collecting his stuff. And I will say hands down, and I do own the Graham Nolan Sundays from Moonstone, both volume 1 and 2, and I will tell you this, that this Regal have now so far with this issue especially have the best represented, you know, printed collection of Graham Nolan stories. And these two stories haven't been collected in any of the two volumes of the Graham Nolan Sundays. So if you want to further your Graham Nolan connection, this is an essential. And especially this, the On the Trail of an Assassin is my favorite Graham Nolan story, because it has layouts and its spacing is exactly like one of those 90s comics, like one of the, like, you know, those very PC, very, you know, that full of action and drama and all of it. If you look at the layouts only, you can see, like, you know, there's a lot of things happening on this. Whereas the Mystery of Firehead Peak is a very old school folk like story. It's got fantasy elements and stuff. It's very unique. It's a very different kind of story, and as most know, I never talk about the content as such and or want to spoil it, so you have to read it for yourself. And so yeah, issues number 7 and 8, go pick it up, because Regal needs all the support that they can get if you want these books. But also, coming to think about Mandrake's Bon Voyage, Regal did announce that they are going to start doing Mandrake comics also in English and in color. So maybe this issue is like the point where they are kind of, you know, introducing all the Phantom fans, making them kind of warming them up for, like, you know, the Mandrake series. Now let's see where that goes. More comics, the merrier. Just go out there, support these guys, and yeah. Thank you for watching. Happy Phantoming. Hello, and welcome to another Chronicle Chamber book review. I'm Ankit, and today I'll be reviewing Regal Comics from India's The Phantom, issues number 9 and 10. Now, those who aren't familiar with Regal Comics of India and their publication of The Phantom in Full Color, which they started in last year of August, you can check out more details about Regal and the previous issues that we've already reviewed in the Chronicle Chamber website as well as the YouTube channel. Now, before I begin the review, I would like to point out that in February, Regal had released issues number 7 and 8. Now, as those who are aware about how Regal have been publishing and their schedules, they usually publish 2 issues with a gap of a month in between. So this came out in February, issues 5 and 6 came out in December. But exceeding all expectations, suddenly after February, in March, we have 2 issues. Now, does that mean Regal is now going to start publishing 2 issues every month? If yes, then that would be great news. And I really hope that is what it's going to be. Anyway, let's get back to the review. Now, issue 9 and 10, there is something I would like to point out, especially about the cover art on this. Issue 9's cover art has been done by me, Ankit, and it's my first work with like in any professional illustration for that matter, and it's also on digital. I have been drawing thing from childhood, and the Phantom, drawing like a Phantom is like a dream come true, and I'm really glad that I got the opportunity and the honor. Especially thankful to Regal and their editorial that, they allowed this. And this is actually based off art from the first story, which was here. Yeah, this one. So, yeah, there are... I went through a lot of iterations because I didn't want to just copy the thing that Terry Beatty had drawn. And I pushed my own ideas and editorial and everything. You can see some pictures of, how things went, like how it developed one by one. It'll be put on screen here. But anyway, getting that across, the next issue is done by Mr. Vincent Moses Raja. And those familiar with Regal will probably know Mr. Raja has been doing covers for the Phantom ever since the very first issue. And he's probably been on, this is his 5th cover, if I'm not mistaken. So, and this is actually, probably my favorite one also, and this is also based off the a panel of a story, the ghost story here, I think, somewhere here. So yeah, now that we have this, we'll go on with the reviews. Now, firstly, the paper quality and printing, everyone knows how much I've harped up about this, and just to put everything in context, the paper quality is glossy and thick and as good as any of the Fruit Trade paperbacks. So those who are well aware will know, like, these issues have the finest quality of paper and the printing fidelity is fantastic. And yeah, another thing is if you buy direct from Regal, you get freebies. Like this one, the issue 9 comes with the freebie of the Phantom sticker. This is again an illustration by me. I had to draw the full figure for this freebie. And issue 10 comes with a mini poster, which is again based on the art from the cover itself. This is a really cool poster that way, the good mark and the skull. So, yeah. Now, coming to the individual issues, not going to spoiler territory, this book has one of my favorite Terry Beatty Sundays, Death Stalks the Fifth Phantom. It's the story of, it's like one of those flashback stories, told by the Chronicles, which is absolutely one of my favorite. And it has got this sense of, danger and vulnerability. The problem I have always felt with, some of the older Phantom stories is that the Phantom always feels invincible. And stories like this, really, where the Phantom is put in a situation of like danger and all, it's great. The Powerhouse Gang, on the other hand, is a very light, I would say a much lighter hearted story. I won't say hearted, but like, yeah, it's a lighter story overall. And again, but it's a great story. It's a crisp, short, and I won't say short though, but like it's a very crisp story done well with everything coming together. And now for issue 10. Issue 10 has The Ghost Story and Iceman. Now, The Ghost Story is basically, again, like, you know, it's a story about, again, Phantom, you know, the 21st Phantom, how he uses his legend and how everything. It's a very standard Phantom story. Whereas The Iceman is, again, a story which develops, just shows the rich history of the Phantom. Like, you know, it goes back about his ancestors. I think it's about the 15th Phantom, if I'm not mistaken, about, you know, how the 21st Phantom is trying to, you know, bring back, or rather, you know, finishing the story of, you know, the 14th Phantom. Like, an incident happened that involved the 14th Phantom, and, you know, that it was unresolved, and it takes them, like, and another great part is that, you know, Kit and Heloise are very, they are very prominent in this story. So you see the Phantom not just as, you know, the ghost who walks, but also as a father figure, you know, guiding his children and giving them a taste of what, you know, they might have to encounter when they become the Phantom. So yeah, and if you look at the, again, the printing, the stories and everything, these are this is a very good package. So again, like, it's this is something that's happening every time they the Regal are bringing out a new issue. The combination of stories and everything is just making it great. Now, one thing I would like to point out is I have noticed Regal always, whenever it's a story by a certain artist, they always put the Sunday drop-off panel that the artist draws. So Terry Beatty has this, but strangely, though this is a Terry Beatty story, they have chosen to go with a drop-off panel that has Olesen's work. So that was a bit strange. That's the only thing I noticed. And yeah, both these issues run for 56 issues and 56 pages. Sorry, and yeah, get them. And I hope, you know, another thing is, with Regal right now, India is bracing for another second wave of, you know, the pandemic. And Regal have already had a lot of issues with distribution of the books. And very honestly, I just hope and wish, you know, the things look up for them, because the stuff they're bringing out is absolutely solid. These books, the quality of these books rather, is at par with any Marvel or DC book that's coming out. And so I it would be a real shame if they can't, you know, go on with this series. I would want this series to run for like years, because so many stories and so many possibilities in this kind of quality of printing and, you know, colors and separation. Great job. So yeah, and happy Phantoming.
Time again for some reviews of Phantomen comic books. Today we have two issues, number 5 and double issue 6-7. Starting off with number 5. Great cover by Luke Arbata, one of his best, in my opinion. The editorial page includes an interview with the Boss Studio about the action figures. I'm looking forward to these. They seem great. The main story is the Sunday story, The Little Detective Who Disappeared, written by Tony DePaul and drawn by Jeff Weigel. It was published in Fru 1882. My son and I liked this story, but felt it could have been a bit more tight and used the detective a bit more. She didn't say any words, really. But, I mean, it is still a really good story. It also featured an Easter egg when they are in Sweden. I wrote more about that in a Chronicle Chamber article. You should check that out if you haven't already. And then there was a black and white reprint. Let's see here. By Ödes Guldet, The Gold of Destiny, with art from Özkan Erap. It's about this old jailbird that has hidden gold from one of his old crimes, buried at the sea. but he needs help from his son to retrieve his riches. But Dave spots the man's skull mark and informs the Phantom. Ooh. Yeah. It's an okay story, in my opinion. Let's move over to 6-7. Again, a cover from Luke Arbata, and again, it's really, really good. When I saw a preview of this issue, I got so excited. It's this great cover, and like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Phantom stories. So let's go through it. Ett nät av lögner, that should be like Web of Lies, written by Klaus Remerti and art by Kari Leppinen. It's the new story of the comic book. Quite intriguing historic story set in the 1620s in Great Britain. I enjoyed it quite a lot. And then there's the first reprint, Story of Devil, and that one, as many of you listeners might know, it's very close to heart by me because this is the one I based my card game on. But, and I mean, it's a really great story. It has won Story of the Year every time it's been published. This time it might not. I don't understand why they didn't use Ivan Peterson's great coloring that was used in the trade paperback given out by Fru and went with this black and white. I think it's a shame, really. But yeah, it's a good story. But would have been great to have it with this great coloring. Yeah. Then there's an article, and you can vote about the best cover. There's also an article about that on Chronicle Chamber that you should check out, and you should vote before 5th of April. And then there's a one-page story that I thought was really funny, and it might be the last one we will see from Allan Sonne, I guess. But yeah, I thought it was funny. Then we have one of these Özkan Eralp stories, Mysteriet med Pilringen, The Mystery of the Arrow Ring. Yeah, like this retold folk story that he redo the arts. Also this, I would enjoy it more if it was colored. So most of this comic book is without color, and I think it's a shame. And then it's the first part of The Dolphins. It's the origin story of Salomo and Nefertiti, the dolphins. It's quite a fun story, but I don't think anyone would put it in their top 10 story. Yeah, and then we get to the preview of the next issue. We will get a new Fru story by Pid Andersson and Johan Boyks. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce those names. Ondskan lurar i mörkret, and that was called Evil Lurks in the Night, and it's also the continuation of the Two Dolphins origin story. Yeah, and that was all the issues, so let's go over to the news. And part of the news is that this is the last issue where Mikael Sol is editor. Next issue will feature Andreas Eriksson. And other news item is that from Kari Leppinen's webpage, we can read about his ongoing project, The Floating Border, the story is called. And the quote from him is, "The story may be the last of Klaus Remerti's work in Phantom, because he is going to leave Egmont, which published Phantom stories in Sweden, and the stories are also sold to Australian through Phantom magazine. I must say that I'm worried that one of the best script writers is not valuable in this business anymore, for I have been accustomed to his manuscript, and what happens to me when my works depend on others, often weaker scripts and new unknown writers. Oof, that's really bad news. Klaus Remartin knows the character and the world of the Phantom very well and produces most of Team Fantomas stories, and I think he's mostly the one deciding on the future of Team Fantomas stories. So if he's leaving Egmont, that is really bad news. Well, over to you, Chronicle Chamber, and happy Phantoming.
We're going to end podcast 185A there. Please stay with us because we will be doing, we'll be touching upon the news in 185B in about a week to 10 days. Thank you for listening to us.
500 years ago, he washed ashore the sole survivor of a shipwreck. And upon the skull of the man who killed his dad, he said, I'm mad, I must eradicate piracy, injustice and cruelty, and all my sons will follow me. So evildoers will believe that this man cannot die.
The Phantom,
the ghost who walks.
The Phantom,
enemies beware, the Phantom's always there, but you won't mind the Phantom.